All right, everyone, as we head into our culture segment this week, I'm very pleased to introduce to you Pete Wilson. Hey, Pete.
How are you, Lisa?
I am doing well. Happy middle of January to you. Very excited to
have
you.
I know. It is cold outside.
It is. Well, I don't know about that. Aren't you in, like, Nashville?
I am, okay. But now I'll be honest, today it's like 50 degrees, but
okay.
It has been really cold for us.
Okay.
And so we're freezing down here. We're not used to it.
All right. Well, we'll give that to you.
Okay.
For those of you who don't know, Pete is the founding and senior pastor of Cross Point Church in Nashville, Tennessee, and wrote for the, many of you may be familiar with Plan B. That was a book that he wrote. How long ago was that, Pete?
Gosh, I think that was 3 years ago now.
Okay. Well, wow, you're turning things out here. Plan B, which actually spawned a curriculum, a DVD curriculum that came out of that, and many people have gone through that. And now Pete has written Let Hope In, Four Choices That Will Change Your Life Forever. And Pete, this is a great topic for our audience because I think we're a generation here that struggles with being hopeful. We feel like even as we hit our early and mid-20s, wow, you know, this isn't kind of where I wanted my life to be heading. I thought it would be more awesome than this. I thought I wouldn't already have been delivered a bunch of junk from my past that I'm going to have to work through. And so some great guidance and great, you know, actually hope that you deliver within the pages of this book.
Well, thank you. I do think it's an important topic. And one that probably in all kinds of different seasons of our life, you know, we struggle with living out this hope that we've been called to. But I do think that, you know, it is a calling to it. I think it's a choice that we can make to live with hope regardless of, you know, what circumstances we may be going through. So it was a fun book to write.
Yeah. Well, let's start by talking a little bit about it. And I want to start with what you address as, you know, our past and the stuff from our past that we have been delivered or we have kind of, you know, taken upon ourselves through bad choices or sin or just whatever. And you kind of talk about our pasts. And of course, for many young adults, it's like, wow, what kind of a past do you have? You haven't even lived that long. But there's a lot from childhood or just beyond that can really affect who we are. And I want to ask you, explain that idea of your past being your past. I think you're quoted as saying your past is not your past if it's still impacting your present.
Right.
So how does it still affect us? And it really, how do we reconcile our past with what we're doing now and where we need to go from here?
Yeah, well, you know, I think about our church is full of 20-somethings, a lot of people, you know, 20s, 30s, a lot of singles. And I'm consistently surprised at really how much pain they're carrying around. It's something we talk about in our church a lot, that, you know, everyone needs healing. No one escapes this life without some emotional bruising along the way. And so, you know, whether it was that bully your senior year of high school, or whether it was your parents' surprise, you know, divorce, whether it was, you know, an addiction that kind of wrapped you up in your college years. I mean, there's just so many things that, you know, we kind of go through in this life that do create pain. And I think often, especially, you know, honestly, even in Christian circles, we have this tendency to want to kind of cover up the pain, pretend like everything is okay and that, you know, we're fine. And so it's not uncommon at all for me to be sitting with someone from church and we're just talking about life and they're talking about this and talking about that. And they'll, you know, talk about different events and they'll say, you know, well, that's in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because, again, that phrase I say a lot is, listen, your past is not really your past if it's impacting your present. And I think for a lot of us, we fail to connect the dots to things that have happened to our past and, you know, choices that we're making today. And I really think that's one of the first steps in really finding sustaining hope in our life, is you gotta come to that realization that if your past, if it hasn't been dealt with properly, you know, whether your pain is on the surface or whether it's been buried deep, if not dealt with properly, it's going to continue to impact your life.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting. So how do you talk to, because I've talked to many young adults and even friends and family members who kind of look at their past and the story they've been delivered, and they just, you know, for them, it's their normal. And so they don't understand what they need healing from. So, or sometimes they'll just write it off and say, well, I've dealt with that, or that's okay. You know, I've gotten over it. I just got over it. But you can tell that maybe there's not, they don't even understand what they needed to get over or what that looks like.
And exactly. And,
yeah.
I had someone at church ask me that exact question yesterday. How do I know if my past is impacting my present? Because, mm-hmm. you know, every human being, we have this unbelievable capacity for self-deception. Mm-hmm. And so this is where I think this is the proactive part of this for all of us. Let's go ahead and assume that more than likely your past probably is impacting your present. And so there's a couple things. Number one, I'm regularly praying and just saying, God, would you open my eyes? Help me see where there's some connection there that maybe I haven't seen. Secondly, I'm trying to put myself in community on a regular basis where people can speak into my life, because other people see that long before I do. They see, like, hey, do you realize that, you know, this choice and that choice and this pattern and that pattern, you know, maybe that has something to do with this. And so I'm trying to put myself in the context of that community. And the third thing, and this has just been for me personally, Christian counseling has been just an amazing tool in my life. I've had some Christian counselors who just, you know what, they're just trained to do that. They're trained to connect the, you know, past to the present. And I've had some wonderful Christian counselors. I've had some pastors also very gifted in that area that have helped me in different seasons of my life see where maybe there's some of those connections that I've just missed.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that you're very, you know, the book is outlined in you walking through these different choices that we have. How, as you talk about, you know, you really cover a lot on shame and kind of what we've taken on for ourselves in that. And then you move on towards how do we get healing? What does it look like to live in gratitude and out of that? But how long, well, I guess my first question is, what's the difference? You know, you talk a little bit about fear in the book, too. What is the difference between fear and complacency? Because some people just aren't moving ahead or aren't really trusting God for things because they're lazy. And they're like, you know, I don't even want to work at that. I don't want to dream big things for myself. I don't want to be hopeful in this, because here's what my life has delivered me thus far. Nothing ever works out. None of my prayers are answered. God doesn't care about me. You know, and they get in this downward spiral. You know, and it just becomes that. And then I think a lot of that plays into fears of just saying, well, then, so I don't want to trust God with this because I'm afraid I'll be disappointed, or I certainly don't want to trust other people because I've been hurt by them. How can we get out of those traps of either not caring or truly being fearful?
Yeah, I do think complacency can be an issue. You know, I've seen it in my own life. You know, I think for me, I see a lot more as I work with people in our church and as I travel and meet people. I see a lot more people that are probably paralyzed by fear than they are stuck because of their complacency. And even honestly, a lot of the complacency, I think, is the result of fear. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. Jesus talks so much about that. I mean, Jesus issued about 125 different commands or imperatives. Of those 125, 21 of them had to do with the topic of fear. So there's 21 different times Jesus says, you know, do not be afraid, or, you know, have courage, or take heart. And, you know, again, quantity in Scripture doesn't always equal importance, but I think it's safe to assume that Jesus took our fears, you know, quite seriously. And, you know, the one statement, again, he said more than any other was don't be afraid. He said it 15 times in four Gospels. And so I think that there's this realization for all of us that fear really holds us back. And everybody responds to fear in different ways. For some people, you know, they become paralyzed or they become complacent. But I think fear, especially, you know, for people that are in their 20s and their 30s, There's so much fear about, you know, what if I make the wrong decision? You know, what if I'm never able to find, you know, real healing? What if I never find my purpose? And, you know, they're dealing with a lot. They're making some of the most important decisions of their life, whether it's, you know, what am I going to do for a career, or who am I going to marry, or am I going to get married, or do I settle down, or do I travel? I mean, there's just so much. And I think it's really easy to get overwhelmed by the fear. And the reality, and we talk a little bit about this in the book, that the goal is not, it's not to fear less. The goal is really to trust more. It's how can I continue to have an intimate relationship with this God who wants to be with me. He wants to walk with me. And the more that I can learn to trust him, the more I can continue to increase my faith in him, the more that those fears begin to just kind of dissipate, and I stay focused on him and what it is that he's calling me to do in life.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting because it seems to me that some people, and I don't know if this is even accurate or not, but it just seems like some people are naturally more hopeful than others. You know, yeah. And you see that even within the church. And, you know, I know Proverbs 13:12 says, hope deferred makes the heart sick, but a desire fulfilled is a tree of life. And a lot of young adults today will say, well, none of my desires are ever fulfilled. And I know you quote A.W. Tozer in the book where he says, you know, what comes into our minds when we think about God is the most important thing about us. And so much of this is sourced out of how we feel about God in light of how we were treated by other people, our own fathers or whomever. So I'm wondering, as we look at that and we think, you know, well, I'm just not a hopeful person, or I'm not, you know, the people that need healing, how long do we have to focus on healing, or can we move forward simultaneously? Like, how do we marry that action and, like you said, trusting God and not necessarily not being fearful, but choosing to move ahead with recognizing that, okay, there's some unhealthiness here that I need to deal with, and just that whole idea of hopefulness not necessarily being a feeling, but being a choice to move forward?
Sure. Yeah, I do. I think it's a both and. I think it's this healing process that I'm going through in my life, it's this continual thing. It's not that I'm waiting until I'm completely healed before I have the opportunity to love and to serve and to do the things that God has called me to do. It's through being obedient to the things that God has called me to do that I find that continual healing. And so, yeah, I think it's one of those deals. You're not sitting around waiting till, hey, I want all the pieces of my life together before, you know, I start the date. Or I want all the pieces of my life, you know, all together before I serve in the church. It is a stepping out there knowing that it's just this continual process, this transformation that's happening in our life as we continue to be shaped by God's Word, as we continue to surrender to him in different areas of her life. And I do. I think that you just hit on a really important point about just the way that we view God. And I do. I think there's a lot of people that, you know, are kind of view God as like this genie in the bottle, and they're really upset because they thought he was going to do this and they thought he was going to do that. And, you know, I've really discovered that a lot about my relationship with God. I've spent a whole lot of my life treating God almost like this cosmic vending machine. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I thought that my good works would be the currency that I could use to get from him whatever it is that I wanted to get. And I'm learning more and more. I'm trying to get to this place where I really grasp this truth that if God doesn't give me one more thing, I still owe him everything. Everything. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the more I'm able to see life as a gift, you know, even at difficult times, to understand that everything is a gift from God, that I'm not entitled to any of this, but I'm trusting that God's using all of this in my life. The more I can have that perspective, the more I really open up my life to the hope that I think I've been called to live out.
Well, you do. I mean, I did want to take a moment to share, you know, just a brief overview. And of course, folks, we're going to link to the book on our site, but to outline the different choices that you do say we have to make. One is choosing to transform instead of transfer, then choosing to be okay with not being okay, choosing to trust rather than please, and choosing to free people rather than hurt them. What, Pete, of these four choices has personally been the most difficult for you as you've kind of walked through this season on your own?
Well, you know, I think they're all difficult. I mean, I would love to say that I think all four of these choices are easy. You know, you just snap your fingers and it'll happen. I think they're all difficult. I would say choosing to free people rather than hurt people, mm-hmm, has been a struggle for me. You know, I kind of captured that phrase because my whole life I heard that hurt people hurt people, and that's true. We've all seen that. We've all done that. Hurt people do hurt people. But the flip side of that is that free people And I believe as Christians, as followers of Jesus, once you experience the unbelievable freedom and grace that comes along with what Jesus did for us through the cross, through his resurrection, that we then have this responsibility to turn around and extend that freedom to other people. And as logical as that sounds, and it, I have found it to be quite difficult in life. When someone hurts you, and someone hurts you in a very deep, very real, very unjust kind of way, everything inside of you wants to strike back. Everything inside of you wants to get even with that other person. And I've struggled with that. I've struggled with my whole life. I continue to struggle with it today. And I have to continually go back and ask God to, you know, to give me a love that I don't have on my own, to love, to forgive people in my life who have hurt me. And so I'm really working on that one, choosing to free people rather than hurt them.
Hmm. Well, and of course, that brings to mind the story of Joseph, which you use in the course of the book. And I think both him and David as examples of, one, a guy who had very specific things done to him that would cause him, you know, any normal person to despair. And then, of course, David, who through many of his own choices had to wrestle with a lot of stuff that he had to plod through and looking back. And I mean, talk about, you know, having to release your past. I mean, here he was charged with truly leading the people of Israel, and he had to look back on his own failures and say, am I even qualified? Why did you pick these guys specifically, and what would you say, I mean, especially to young adults, as far as looking to these examples in Scripture as being motivators for themselves having hope here in the 21st century?
Yeah, well, I love both of these characters, Joseph and David. Outside of Jesus, I've probably studied those two more than any other two. I don't know why I've been very drawn to them. I think they have very similar pain in life, but for completely different reasons. You know, it's interesting, in Joseph's life, again, just as you said, he was struggling with things that had been done to him for the most part. What we understand about Joseph, unbelievably faithful through the good, through the bad. You know, his brothers cause a tremendous amount of pain in his life. And there he is at the end of his life with the power to really just obliterate them if he wants to. Mm-hmm. And instead of transferring the pain, he allows God to transform it. You know, he didn't deny his past. He grieves his past, but then it's one of my favorite verses in the Bible, Genesis 50:20, where he says to his brothers, "You meant evil against me, but God meant it for good." And I just love that. I think it's an incredible reminder for those, you know, listening that have been hurt, and someone hurt them, and you know what? Someone hurt them intentionally, just brought a tremendous amount of pain into their life, and maybe because of that, they feel second class. Maybe they feel scarred. Maybe, you know, it's a hurt where they feel like they will never be whole again. And I just think that verse is an incredible reminder that, yeah, you know what? There quite possibly was someone who intended to bring hurt and evil into your life. But then there's this little phrase, but God meant it for good. It's this reminder that God can take the pain, whatever the pain we've experienced in our life, and he can transform that, and he can use it for his glory, he can use it for your good. And then David, like you said, it's the very opposite. I mean, David made so many poor choices in his life, and so David's not so much dealing with shame as he's dealing with guilt. You know, the guilt says, I did something wrong. Shame says, I am wrong. And, you know, David had to work through that guilt of understanding the grace and the depth of God's grace, and how he had to understand he wasn't second class because of the choices that he had made, but that God could work through him. And so very similar pain for the both of them, brought on by two completely different paths in life. But in both cases, the key factor was their ability to surrender to God and to surrender to his plan for them.
Well, we started out our discussion. I know you mentioned that you were, you know, pretty surprised, I guess, or I don't know, surprised, but, you know, burdened by the amount of brokenness you're seeing in the church and even in your church, and what is coming out of people's stories and out of their pasts. But what, in light of preaching messages of hope now and what you've seen, what are some good examples? And I know you thread the book with some of them, of just stories of true hope where people have decided to allow themselves to be transformed, and they've decided to trust, you know, and they've decided to heal and forgive others. how are you seeing this really manifest itself in the body of believers that you're associated with, and how can that then transfer to people who want that for themselves?
Yeah, I'm just extremely pleased with what I see taking place in our church, what I see really taking place around the world, just so much transformation. And I realize, like, that the hope that we're seeing today, the stories of transformation we're seeing today, they're not necessarily unique to this particular time period. You know, you open up the Bible and you read all the way through the Bible, it's one story after another that reminds us of this incredible gospel truth that who we were yesterday does not have to determine who we are today. That there is hope, that there is healing, and regardless of what you have done, and regardless of what has happened to you, that God's grace can supersede all of that. And you know what? When I see people really grasp onto that truth in our church, beautiful things start to happen. Now, there's a young lady, I actually wrote a little bit about her in the book, in our church, who one of the very first times that I met her, I mean, her life was a mess. I mean, it was hard for me to even believe that the stuff that was going on was going on. And sometimes I tell people, ask me if I watch much reality TV. I'm like, no. Why? I mean, why would I do that? I see it play out every day, like in real life. And this girl's life, just the choices she was making, very sexual promiscuous, a string of really just poor choices, bad relationships. And again, the more we talked, so many things went back to her childhood. So many things that went back to the relationship or lack of relationship that she had with her father. And I'm telling you, just to start to see her connect the dots, to understand that so much of what had happened to her in her past was contributing. Okay, not an excuse in any way. No excuse for the choices she was making, but it was a contributing factor to why she was searching for love in the ways that she was searching for love. As that light bulb started to go off for her, as she began to experience the grace that you know Jesus could offer her for her past, that he had called her to a purpose, that she wasn't second class because of the choices that she had made, but that God did have a plan and a purpose for her life today. Oh man, there's nothing more exciting than that. As a pastor, as just a Christian, when you start to see people experience that kind of life change, as they begin to grasp what I think are really some just core scriptural truths.
Yeah. Well, and I think to see hope lived out in other people is a great motivator for hope in us. Kind of similar to when we see answered prayer, you know, it's a motivator to pray.
It's contagious.
Yeah,
I mean, it really
is. It's contagious. So, well, Pete, thank you so much for being part of this conversation. Thanks for writing the book, Let Hope In. Again, the subtitle on that, 4 Choices That Will Change Your Life Forever. And we'll make that available here on our site. I just want to close. One thing that you say is your past can't totally be erased, but your past can be restored. Even if you can't have a brand new beginning, you can have a brand new ending. And so I think that in and of itself is hopeful for our audience. And so all the best to you, Pete. Hopefully we'll hear more from you. And thanks for just giving a great word of encouragement to our peeps here at The Boundless Show.
You bet. Thank you so much, Lisa.